Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
Mr. Sandman,
you get the idea?
Bring me a dream.
It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips like...
It's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
And tell him that his lonesome
life's the Sandman.
Over, Sandman.
We all know it's inevitable. As uncomfortable as it is, we can't live forever. And unfortunately, neither can our loved ones. Death is a fact of life. When you lose a loved one and you're responsible for their financial affairs, there are a number of things you must do. And it can be overwhelming. We figured that out this past week. Today, we want to help you take the guesswork out of it so you can focus on what's most important. Join us for the entire show as we share a checklist for what to do when a loved one dies. This is Protect Your Assets. I am David Hollander, your host. They call me the Sandman around here, and that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering the most troubled legal, tax, or financial questions each week right here on KNBR. And that's because we have a tax planning firm, a law firm, and a financial advising company all together. So this past week, I sat down with Ken and Susan. Now, they have two boys. Ken's a retired engineer and has managed to accumulate with his real estate and 401k and et cetera, et cetera, a little over $11 million in his total estate. They both told me that they wanted to make sure their boys received as much of the estate as possible when they both ultimately kick the bucket. They were very concerned about the tax law changes that are coming and also this Prop 19 here in California. And they want to know what they could do right now to make sure their sons and grandkids get as much as possible and that it doesn't go to the government. They're tired of the way the government keeps spending their money on things they don't agree with. So they brought in with them their estate plan, their will, their trust. And I was thrilled that they had put a plan together that included their house, their cars, retirement accounts, life insurance, things like that. But after I reviewed it with them, it turned out that it was a real mess. In fact, they were looking at some serious taxes and penalties by the IRS and a long and expansive probate because their documents were so outdated and just missed some pretty fundamental pieces. So that got me thinking. And then later in the week, I had a really sad story from a friend who had lost his spouse and he just wanted to know what to do. And so we went through that. So bottom line is I put together a what to do when a loved one dies checklist. And so this morning, we're going to go through it. There's just some fundamental things you need to know, some easy things you can do, some things you don't want to do. We'll go over some misnomers out there about fact versus fiction. It's going to be a great show. And this is important stuff. So listen carefully and learn how to save lots of time and angst for your family. Now, let's get started. Well, it was a relatively quiet week overall as summer is coming to an end and the kids go back to school. The Dow Jones was off about 0.4% for the week. The S&P was up a little bit, up 0.8%. NASDAQ up 2.3%. The MSCI EAFE, E-A-F-E index, up 0.8%. 10-year Treasury flat, 4.23. Oil down slightly to $80.06 a barrel. And bonds were up a little bit, 0.3%, to close the week at 95.87. Not much happening. And so late August is when the Fed has their annual Jackson Hole Symposium. And this offers policymakers and folks like me an opportunity to outline what's coming from the Fed. In the past, last year, you may remember Fed Chair Powell was talking about the markets. And that was the case a year ago when Jerome Powell, in a short and pointed speech, said the Fed's determination to defeat inflation, even if it resulted in, quote, some pain, end quote, for the U.S. stock market didn't really matter. And as we recall, shortly after this time, the markets started to fall and had a couple bad months. Fast forward to this year, Well, Chairman Powell's speech was hawkish, but it was definitely more balanced overall, and he highlighted how they're going to continue to look at the data and they're going to keep their options open. But he did say that this was essentially the beginning of the end. So this is nothing new in my view, but the three takeaways from the meeting that just concluded yesterday, Friday, are the following. You may want to write this down. So first, 2% is and will remain the Fed's target. There's been some speculation, particularly from some educators out there, that the Fed could tolerate or raise its inflation target. That's not going to happen, according to Chairman Powell. Second, officials are determined to keep it until the job is done. Keep it meaning the Fed is prepared to raise rates a little bit more if needed, and they intend to keep borrowing costs high until inflation is on a convincing path towards the Fed target. Now, that's important because that means that rates will most likely stay higher for longer. And so if you're someone who's buying real estate or looking at refinancing your property, well, rates are going to be high for a little bit longer. And so you're going to have to bear that if you're about to go through that. Maybe you're going to wait. Maybe wait it out until that time ends. When is that going to be? Well, most likely looking like right now, the end of 24 is when we'll start to see anything like that happen. The reason I say that is we look at the bond market each and every day. And right now you can see, if you look at the yield curve, where bonds start to come back down again in terms of interest rates, about a year and a half out is where we're seeing that. That's what the market's guessing. So typically the market reacts a little bit before that. And that's why we're calling towards the end of 24, where you might start to see that again. It's going to be, you have to be patient. It's the bottom line. What's the third takeaway? Well, the Fed may be close to wrapping up its rate hikes. And so after having hiked rates so aggressively in 22, Chairman Powell signaled that the policy has shifted to a phase where they are more sensitive to the risk of doing too much, is what he said. And that just means raising rates too high. So how should you position your portfolio right now as we move into the fall? Because as you know, typically the market, as we enter in September and October, doesn't like it. If you look at the past, typically September and October are difficult months, and you should expect higher volatility. And without a quick Fed pivot, which the market's been counting on for so long, I don't expect to see a lot more upside from the S&P 500 and any of the major equity markets at this point. Once the Fed reaches its target, it will be likely that stocks at that point will go back up again. So right now I'm saying patience, discipline, those are the key in the months ahead as you look at investing in this market. So what are some strategies you can do right now? Well, certainly take a look at your portfolio. I know a lot of you have been ignoring it for some time. I wouldn't recommend that. There's certainly some areas of strength in your portfolio that probably got a little ahead of themselves. And so now is a great time to take that off the table. Dollar cost average into those other sectors in the stock market that are trading at below fair value. So there's still some decent value around if you look on the equity side. And on the fixed income side, I'm seeing a very interesting development occur there. And so let me share that with you this morning. I'm still liking the barbell approach. I talk a lot about this. I like to visually explain this. What that means is a barbell, you know, when you lift one, you do a curl, say with your, you know, your hand and your bicep, you're trying to work that bicep muscle. There's weight right on each end of the handle that you hold. That's a barbell. And you can do the same thing with your fixed income portfolio. It's called a barbell approach. And what that means is on the one side, you go with one term of investment. And so I'm going to call shorter term. I like the one and a half year space right now on your, say, CDs and treasuries and, you know, insured types of investments. Those are safe. So I like that approach on the short end where you may need some liquidity in the short term. And then I would suggest you go across the bar and you go out a little farther on the other side of the weight. So the other side would be, again, higher quality fixed income that is a little longer on the duration, all right? And so I'm liking 10-year right now, and I do particularly like the agency space right now. If you take a look at that, you'll see that rates have become pretty compelling in that area. And so that's not a bad place to pick up some really good yield right now. Now, if you are in the equity market and you're particularly paying attention to the S&P 500 right now, well, what I would like to say to you there is you got to pay attention to what's going on with the S&P 500. So as you know, we were just talking about where it was settling this week. And so we saw the S&P 500 at 4406. That's where it closed the week, 4406. So what does that mean? Well, it does mean that you want to take a look at the upside of that. And so what does that mean? Well, when we look at the upside right now, I'm seeing 4451. So if you're someone who sets targets that you're trying to reach, and when you reach those, you either do something or you don't. On the upside, we're looking at 4451 for the next level of breakout. But again, I don't really see that happening in the immediate future here. So 4451 would be the upside if we get through that with some strength, 4537. On the downside, and this is where we've got to pay attention, because I think this is more likely than not in the next months to come. So 4329, if we get through 4329 on the downside, your next stop is 4221. So you may want to write those down if you are active, say, in that S&P 500 as your support and your resistance levels. What documents do you need when someone you love becomes sick or dies? Don't wait on this one. You need to know what you need to know. So I will go through this when we come back. Today we're talking about what to do when a loved one dies. Find out what you need to do. You're listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, The Sandman.
Welcome back. I am David Hollander, also known as The Sandman, and you are listening to the Protect Your Assets show this morning. And we're having a tough discussion today. Today is what to do if your spouse or a loved one passes away. I know losing someone who's close to you, like a spouse or a family member, it's heartbreaking, it's challenging, and the pain of their absence is just overwhelming. And navigating the aftermath can be daunting. So in such a difficult time, it's crucial to have a clear understanding of the next steps you need to take. Knowing the necessary things can help alleviate some of the stress and uncertainty during this difficult time. So this morning I have put together a PDF. It's a 2-page document. We can email this to you. Absolutely complimentary this morning. It's titled, What to Do If Your Spouse Passes Away. And so let's just jump right into it. You know, immediately after their death, what you need to do is the following. So you may want to write this down. You definitely want to get a certified death certificate. Now, I recommend that you get 10 of these. 10 is just the number, and the certified type. So, you know, they're going to ask you as you're making arrangements, you know, how many do you want? And so just remember 10. 10 death certificates is what you're looking for. You'll need these for different types of accounts, for your real estate, for your bank accounts, for insurance policies, 401ks, things that you would never think you might need, you're going to need. So that's one of the most important items to get a hold of. Other thing immediately after your spouse's death is call your attorney or your advisor. Then if you can locate, in fact, I would do this before, locate your spouse's will and or trust. We'll get into that in a minute, which is right for you. Also, you want to notify your spouse's or loved one's employer, as soon as possible. Next, learn about any existing funeral or burial plans that are out there. I was literally talking to an 88-year-old fellow this week who called in and had some questions about what he should do. He's 88, you know, he's still out there running and doing things, you know, good for you. But he didn't have any existing funeral burial plans. And what he wanted to do with his remains was entirely different than what his newer, they've been together about 30 years, his third wife, she has some ideas for him, and he didn't like it. So he called us and said, what can I do about that? Well, you can create your own plan. So in any event, that's something you want to get a hold of. Also, what's very important is notifying Social Security Administration as well as Medicare and or Medicaid in California's Medi-Cal if you've been involved in that. That all starts statute of limitations, clawback rules, all sorts of things like that. So you want to notify those authorities. Now, I was talking just a minute ago about the documents. And so that leads me into the trust question. So is a trust a good idea? There are five estate planning myths that I've come across. I've heard this. So the basics, before you really know what type of estate plan you need, okay, whether it's a will or a trust, take inventory of the assets that are out there. So just find out, you know, is there life insurance? Is there retirement accounts? Is there any sort of a business that I need to be aware of? Real estate? Then there's some documents that will make up your plan. So generally, what you and your spouse need is a will. You each should have your own will, and these need to be witnessed by two independent people that are non-interested, so you can't have your kids, you know, witness your signing it. We had that situation happen where someone who had a father who was in his late 70s, a son Aaron was 42, and his dad just passed away. And he did a holographic will, but he didn't have it witnessed. And so, you know, we're going to have to submit a will anyways to probate, but it's not a proper will because it didn't have the witnesses on there. So again, you know, there's certain just basic things you need to have to make your will admissible. Now, trusts, there's so many different types of trusts, and the most typical and the easiest to change or to update if things change in your life as you move along, and I usually recommend that. It's called the Revocable Living Trust. In our business, we call that the RLT, Revocable Living Trust. And those do avoid probate, meaning that if an asset is placed in that trust and you or your loved one passes away, you don't have to go to court to sell or transfer that asset to the ultimate beneficiary. The trust will control it. However, as I was talking about the story in the beginning, that caused this. We had someone come in this past week with their documents, seemed to be in order. But as we dug into it, we found out that many of their assets worth over $150,000 hadn't been put in the trust. And so if you don't put your assets in the trust and they're over $150,000, you're going to go to probate court. It's just that simple. You have to get a court order to transfer that, a probate order, to transfer that into the trust and then to the ultimate beneficiary. And if you don't just put the title in the trust, you've got a problem. So I always advise people, you know, on your house, on your cars that are worth more than 150, any sort of an asset. Now, I'm not getting into retirement accounts or life insurance right now, but those sort of accounts, you should most likely, again, put them into a revocable living trust so it passes to your ultimate beneficiary. And then there's a trustee who's named in that document who has the power to do certain things to make that happen. Now, again, we had another situation this week where it was a 98-year-old fellow whose son was trying to pay some of his dad's bills. And even though he had all of his documents in order, he really didn't know what to do. So he called up and sure, we walked him through, you know, what exact document he needed. In this case, it was a power of attorney for the banks. The banks would accept that document and would add his name on as a signer. Since his dad was still alive, remember the power of attorneys evaporate once the person dies, so they're no longer valid. However, in this case, dad is alive, but he's having some cognitive problems, so son's able to step in and pay those bills with that power of attorney. Now, he had a brokerage account, a very large brokerage account, and the custodian wouldn't accept the trust. So this is interesting where this large account was funded in the trust properly. The name of the trust was on the account. Son came in to try and become the successor trustee, and the brokerage denied the power of attorney. They said, no, we're not going to accept that. The trust is a different document. Now, again, it's up to their legal department, and then you have to get into a legal battle with them. And so even though the power of attorney may be valid, may exonerate them, may have the specific language where they would act, you still have to go through the hassle. And so if you've got a certain stock that's moving in price and you want to execute on it and get out of it, well, you can't. There's nothing you can do. We've had this happen several times. I have several cases where I've had spouses own stock options and the options are expiring and they're in the name of the spouse who unfortunately died in his or her sleep. And next thing you know, the spouse is trying to execute on that stock and get out of it, and they can't. There's nothing they can do. The department at the company won't accept anything. And so you have to go to court again and get an order. So I know this is complicated. It seems like, you know, well, gosh, I don't even know where to start. What do I do here? And so you just have to ask yourself the question, do you know if what you have in place right now will solve all of your problems, not your friends, not your neighbors? You know, it's you. It's your unique situation. And if you're not sure, it's a really good idea to first and foremost get a copy of this What to Do If Your Spouse Passes Away checklist that I prepared. This is absolutely free. I'm going to give it to you this morning. You can get it by picking up the phone right now and calling 866-PROTECT. Phil is there right now. Phil will answer the phone. He'll make sure he gets this over to you. We just need your email. Again, it's a two-page document, really simple checklist, just like a doctor's checklist, things that you would want to do within several days, 2 weeks, etc., after someone passes away. And it gets the conversation started. So maybe you don't have these sort of things, and at least you can see, you know, what you need. And then if you have different documents, you're not sure what they do, and particularly today, when you have this new Prop 19 law out there, we'll talk about here shortly. You know, what can you do about that? What sort of documents do you need to solve the problems that you're going to face? It's just inevitable, particularly here in California, where, you know, things are different. We know that. We live here. We pay the taxes. Everyone says, "What do you do that? It's so expensive." I know. We like the weather. It's beautiful. But the reality is, the laws are very challenging. And if you don't have your documents in order, guess what? You're just looking at a lot of anxiety and pain when you don't need it, because it's already going to be stressful enough. So, you know, reach out to us, get some help. 866-PROTECT is the number. You can get straight answers right now. Call this number, 866-PROTECT. They will send you out that What to Do If two-pager. Just give them your email. Coming up next, don't miss our popular They Say segment, where they say if you have a trust, then your family-owned business will automatically pass to the ones you love. Is that really true? Find out. You are listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander, the Sandman. That's me. We will be right back.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I am David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you are listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And you know, it's been a tough week. I had a few unfortunate folks who lost loved ones, and I know losing someone is incredibly heartbreaking. It's challenging, and it's just tough. Not only the pain of their absence is overwhelming, but just navigating the aftermath can be daunting, and in such a difficult time, it's really clear and important that you have some steps that you can take to know what to do, because this can help alleviate some of the stress, because the external forces from banks, brokerage firms, etc., can be really difficult when you're already going through a difficult time. So this morning I put together a What to Do If Your Spouse Passes Away checklist. It's a very easy read for the subject. I know it's difficult, but there's some steps that you can take, you can put into place, and make sure you've got these covered And we've been going through that this morning. I'm happy to give this away. I'll give you that number here shortly where you can call and have this emailed to you at absolutely no cost. But these are just some basics you need to do. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? Here's David Hollander, the Sandman's answer.
All I know is that I don't. All right, so here's one they say. They say that if you have a trust, then your family-owned business is protected. And if your spouse were to pass away, your kids would be fine. They would get it. Is that true? Well, no, it may not be. So let's say that you know you did acquire a business together. Maybe you were working and your spouse was at home, maybe part time working, helping raise the family, doing other things. Well, the business is a community property asset, and so if you were faced with your spouse passing away, well, obviously you could still run the business. Maybe not. Maybe your spouse is very involved in your business, but. But, you know, you may not be in a psychological place to do it anyways once you lost your spouse. So first of all, is the business properly funded in your trust? That's the question you need to ask. Just because you set up a trust doesn't mean that your family-owned business, including real estate, you know, you could have a lot of rental properties. Lots of clients we have lots of real estate. And they just think that, you know, everything's fine because they have a trust, they have real estate, they have attorneys. Maybe they have a large stock account in a trust. We just had that this past week where everything is supposedly fine. Looks like it's fine. Documents say they're fine. But then the brokerage firm says, no, it's not fine. We're not going to accept that. So what if your kids have no interest in the business? Well, in the event of your death, who's going to run the day-to-day operations of the business, make, say, the stock trades, if those have to be made, run the real estate if that has to be done, to preserve the value of that asset and to make sure it passes on effectively? Well, that's where you might need to think about, as part of your estate plan, something that's called a business continuity plan. Now, this could include the tax considerations. Who's going to manage the day-to-day? What sort of revenue do you want distributed out to your family? And how to preserve the maximum value of that asset, or multiple assets if you have a diverse portfolio holding. You don't want to be short-sighted on this one, because the most recent pain that we've seen, particularly when it comes to real estate, is Prop 19. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I would encourage you to go check out the website at the California Board of Equalization. So, you know, the California Board of Equalization is a taxing authority here in California. They have developed a website specifically for Prop 19. You can just search that term, Proposition 19. They have a frequently asked question tab when you get there. Click on that tab, sit down with your favorite cup of coffee and read away, because I promise you it will be interesting. As you read through the frequently asked questions, one of the things you're going to learn as it comes to your residence or your rental property is that even if you funded it properly, let's say it's in the trust, let's say your kids or other family members are going to receive that property efficiently through the trust document, avoiding probate court, well, they're not going to avoid Prop 19. And what Prop 19 says, if you read the frequently asked questions, is when you and your spouse have passed away, the county in California, where the property resides, has the ability and the right, the legal right, to reassess that property to the current fair market value. And so if you bought the property years ago, and as part of your cash flow, you're paying that lower tax rate with the Prop 13 step up each year of 2%, you've probably been in pretty good shape. Well, that's changed now. There is this new Prop 19 law, which says that they have to raise the current property tax rate to the existing fair market value of the property, appraised value. And this will affect your heirs and will affect cash flow and may affect the way that you think about that property. Well, we have designed, we are attorneys, as you know, and we have designed, as part of the business continuity plan, a particular type of trust vehicle that can own and control that property for possibly a generation if that's something that you're looking to do. But you just need to sit down with an attorney who's skilled in this area to talk to you about, well, how do you protect and preserve the assets that you want to keep within your family? Because only you know which property is the best and which might make the most sense to keep and which might not. And if you don't have those conversations or if you haven't laid that out in a plan, well, guess what? Then you're exposed and you're looking for trouble. It's just that simple. So I would highly recommend that you do something about that and don't just leave it to chance. All right. What else do you need to think about if your spouse passes away? Now, again, this is just being proactive and getting ahead of something that could happen, again, out of nowhere. We all know life is short. Things happen out of nowhere. Again, just all these stories that I hear about. We have a lot of clients, and I get a lot of calls, and this last week was tough. You know, I had someone who has a 38-year-old a daughter-in-law with kids, and their son is married to her, and unfortunately, she's diagnosed with brain cancer this past week. So these things just come out of nowhere, and you got to get prepared for this stuff. You realize these things. So within 2 weeks after someone has passed away, these are the things you want to do. Remember, I talked about the certified death certificate. I recommend 10 of those. What you want to do within 2 weeks after death is secure copies of those. So usually you'll order those through the funeral arrangements that you've made. Hopefully you've done that in advance. And they'll ask you for those. And within 2 to 3 weeks, you should be getting those delivered to you in the mail. You can also pick them up usually at the mortuary or the funeral home. You also, within the 2 weeks, I recommend notifying all insurance companies that are out there. Again, so you may want to have a list of the insurance companies. Also, you should try to meet with your trust or estate attorney or find someone who knows what next steps you need to take to help you with this, because it's not going to be easy for you to do any of this. You also want to start changing the title on the different accounts, the bank accounts, the investment accounts, any sort of credit. And the reason for that is you're looking for trouble if you try to do something way after the fact. Sometimes these custodians who hold these accounts have their own requirements, and you don't know until you ask, and then they say, well, what do you mean they passed away? Oh, we have to freeze the account, and now you're stuck. There's nothing you can do. This happens all the time. And so if you're ahead of that, if you have the proper paperwork in order, and you go to the custodian, you show them, and you have the trail, they can't deny you, particularly if you have different ways to attack them. So, and that's the way I look at it. It's like a war in a way. You know, you're dealing with these people who are holding your money hostage, and you're trying to open the gate to let the hostage out. You need the right key, or else the gate's not going to open. It's that simple. You don't want to end up in court for this kind of stuff. So that's why I recommend you follow the protocol here and just make sure that you're in good shape if something like this were to happen. The other thing you want to do, and I've seen this happen, are the three major credit bureaus. Unfortunately, the thieves are ruthless. They're heartless, and they don't know you. They don't know your spouse. They don't know your family, and so they may try and take that identity. And next thing you know, you're getting texts or emails or letters about things that seem legitimate, but they're not. And you have these thieves stepping into the shoes of your loved one, taking on their identity and trying to take over different accounts that you may own. So it's very important within those 2 weeks to contact the three major credit bureaus and let them know that this person has passed away and that anything related to them, you can lock it down and keep records of that in case something pops up later. At least you covered that one. I also recommend that you meet with your accountant, your tax preparer, because this will be the year you file a final tax return for that person if you were filing jointly. And so you need to get that done in a timely manner and make sure that you are aware of how your taxes will change, because now that you've lost that second deduction, that second maybe income source, your tax bracket's going to change and probably for the worst. So it's better to be aware of that ahead of time than to get interest and penalties that can be exorbitant down the line. You also want to cancel driver's license, any services or subscriptions that you no longer need. And if your spouse was in the military, check with the VA because you may be eligible for some benefits that you didn't even know existed out there. And so doing these sort of things, you know that if you've lived long enough, you've probably had a stress test from your doctor or know someone who has. And you know that medieval torture device where you run uphill with wires attached to your chest and they tell you, oh, you can do it just for another moment. And it feels like super glue there. It's ripping you apart. I know that one. Well, the doctor is looking to see how your body reacts to physical stress to make sure that your heart is okay. Well, we can do the same thing with all the panting and heavy sweating for your estate. It really is easy. It's called an estate planning stress test, and we can help you uncover problems that we see all the time before you get that yourself. Listen, you can't get a second opinion from the guy or gal who gave you the first opinion or who hasn't called you in years about all the legal changes that have happened in the past 3 years. You can get a straight, honest, objective opinion from us right now by picking up this phone. Call this number, 866-PROTECT. Again, call the number 866-PROTECT. Ask for the free copy of What to Do If Your Spouse Passes Away. We'll email that over to you right away. The number to get yours right now, 866-776-8328. Coming up next on Protect Your Assets, think your spouse will end up with your retirement account? Think again. Find out what's happened to others who weren't paying attention. It always pays to keep it tuned right here. You're listening to Protect Your Assets. We'll be right back.
If you missed any of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, all you have to do is go to pyaradio.com where you can download or listen to our latest shows for free. Just go to pyaradio.com on your computer or mobile device when it's most convenient for you. That's pyaradio.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Protect Your Assets. I am David Hollander, also known around here as the Sandman. And that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal, tax, or financial questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And boy, I was on full call this week. Lots of things popping up. And so I'm glad we could help out. And so this morning we are giving away this What to Do If Your Spouse or Loved One Passes Away. It's a very quick two-pager that we'll email right over to you with lots of just helpful tips on what you can do if something comes out of nowhere, because let's face it, life is short. We all know that. And losing a loved one is heartbreaking. It's challenging. And the last thing you want to do is try and navigate this when you're dealing with all the other stress that's going to come your way. So please get a copy of this. We're happy to share it with you. So today we've been sharing what you do if a spouse passes away. And, you know, just getting back to the topic, many clients I've met with mistakenly believe that their will or their trust will take precedence over the beneficiary designation form. Now, that could just be flat out wrong. And here's why. A will governs assets of one's probate estate. That's right. Your will governs that asset over your trust. Now, accounts or policies that have, by contract, the beneficiary designated, that is not governed by either your will nor your trust, because that asset will pass probate. What am I talking about? Well, 401ks, life insurance policies, annuities. You know, just thinking back, I met with someone recently who had 401ks spread around different companies because they had worked for many companies over the past 25 years of their working life. And when we sat down and reviewed their accounts, we discovered that his ex-wife, from who he had been divorced for about 15 years, was the primary beneficiary of one of his accounts. And so if he died, his ex-wife would end up getting that 401k, even though he's remarried and he wants his new wife to have it. Another problem that we've seen is contingencies. And this is what I'm talking about, where something comes out of nowhere, which unfortunately we saw happen this week. You wouldn't think that a mother would live longer than her son would. But we had that happen this week. We had a young young son, unfortunately, who just got caught up in the wrong crowd. And again, with these kids today, it's tough. And I really, you know, my heart goes out there to all the parents who try to be good parents, try to put up with what's happening today in social media and just what these kids are, you know, getting poisoned in their mind with. And in this case, this son unfortunately passed away before his mom did as a result of the friends he was hanging around with. And so, you know, now the mom has to deal with this situation. In this case, she had a child with special needs. And when the special needs child passes away before the mom does, and then let's say she becomes sick shortly thereafter and then passes away, the two remaining kids share everything, in this case, 50-50, and that special needs trust essentially evaporates. And if they had children, not in this case, but if they did have children, then that child wouldn't receive anything. And that may not be what you want. Maybe you want all of your kids equally to share your property. And if you have grandkids, which again, another neighbor of mine recently was blessed with, he's going to have a grandson here coming up in December. And so he's going to have a grandchild, and he hasn't made any arrangements for what if his son, you know, predeceased him, and now his daughter-in-law has a child that's his grandchild, but she remarries. And what if she decides to give that asset, or she doesn't decide, maybe her new husband decides his kids deserve it more than your grandkids do. Is that something you want to happen? Well, maybe not. So, you know, you can make changes to these things and make them the way you want, but I recommend that you review your estate plans at least every 3 to 5 years, and particularly if there's a death or if there's a new birth in your family, you know, take a look at it. And like I was talking in the last segment, there have been tax law changes here in California. This Prop 19 is really no joke. If you own real estate, you need to look at your estate planning practice when it comes to your real estate rental properties right now, because the law has changed. So you can set up your complimentary 15-minute estate planning session with an attorney on my team. We are attorneys, not just financial managers, but we also all attorneys and tax people in one location, by calling this number right now, 866-PROTECT. Call 866-PROTECT to get your copy this morning of what to do if a loved one passes away. This is a great checklist, super easy to follow. We will email it right over to you, 866-PROTECT, to get yours right now, 866-776-8328. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together a great show today. My executive producer, network manager, Kevin Renfer, and this morning managing the network was Raf. Thanks. Thank you. And of course, Phil, Adrian, Cam, and the studio for helping out there, because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. Thanks again, everybody. You have been listening to the Protect Your Assets show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Have a great weekend, and go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed is not considered your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.